Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, welcome to another edition of Sports Urban Legend. Along with my co-host Mokwali Matthew, I'm of course William Amo. What's up, Mac? How you doing?
Hey, what's up? How's it going?
I'm doing good, man. Glad to have you on the show as always.
Thank you for having me as usual.
Thank you. Alright. So on today's show, you know, we're gonna talk, you know, WWE, you know, Becky Lynch. Shocking announcement about her being pregnant and vacating the title, which as of right now looks like a retirement. You know, we'll dive into that. We'll talk about what else was going on in the world of WWE. You know, Otis and Asuka winning the Money in the Bank matches. Talk a little AEW. As well, and you know, give the results of the Money in the Bank, of course, and you know, talk sports and entertainment. But you know, most importantly, you guys all know that the number is 563-999-3529. That's 563-999-3529. So feel free to talk about these or any topics, you know, just, you know, let your voice be heard. But let's ring the bell. You know, let's talk about the big news in WWE. That is, of course, the man, Becky Lynch. You know, she basically made a huge announcement, heartfelt announcement, that, you know, she's pregnant, and as a result, she, you know, she had to vacate the title, and you know, she entered the ring with Asuka's Money in the Bank, you know, briefcase. While Asuka was in the ring, you know, well, actually, Asuka came in afterwards, after Becky Lynch entered the ring with Asuka's briefcase, and then she made the announcement that, you know, after she opened the briefcase for Asuka, that it wasn't for a number one contendership match, that Asuka actually won the title because Becky Lynch, you know, had to relinquish the title. So after Asuka had like a, I'd say about a 2-minute celebration in and outside of the ring, you know, Becky Lynch, you know, she revealed to her that, you know, that Asuka can continue to be the warrior that she is, and she's more happier than Asuka winning the title because she's going to finally be a mother. And, you know, so as a result, Becky Lynch ends her year-plus reign as the Raw Women's Champion. And now she's, you know, starting the next chapter of her life. So congratulations to Becky Lynch. You know, she had one of the best title reigns in WWE history, you know, and she's going to be a mother. So congratulations to her, Becky Lynch, and, of course, Seth Rollins, you know, the father. So,
yeah, congrats to them. Who would ever thought that a man would get pregnant, you know? But
and anything's possible in WWE.
Anything's possible, but, yeah, congrats, you know, she and Seth Rollins, they're going to be starting family, and she'll be away for a while. Probably won't see her for the rest of the year now. So you know, yeah, good luck to her. But, you know, the title right now, it's in good hands. And Asuka is very deserving of it. I mean, I thought she should have had a title when she originally made her debut in the WWE, you know, when she was on that winning streak. And you know, all of a sudden, WWE decided they wanted to bury her for some reason. But I'm glad that, you know, she has a chance to redeem herself now and show the world how great of a champion she can be.
And yeah, the WWE buried Asuka at the worst possible time. I mean, she got her first loss. She was undefeated for at least 2 years. You know, that includes NXT and WWE, you know.
Yeah.
So her first loss was at the worst possible time. It was Tom Brady, the undefeated Patriots versus your Giants losing to Charlotte Flair at WrestleMania, the most important time she needed a win to solidify herself as, you know, the dominant force that she is.
Yeah, I don't know why it didn't make any sense at the time.
It didn't, because you're developing a new star. Obviously, she's been a star in Japan for many years before she came to WWE. But you want to establish her as a star in WWE, and you make her lose to Charlotte Flair, who's on her 11th title reign right now. You know, since she won the NXT title, you know, she didn't need that loss. You know, she would eventually win. I think, what was it, last year, that ladder match? I think some interference to win the title. In that, what was it, that triple threat ladder match?
Right.
But yeah, this is her second ever title reign, and you know, congratulations to Asuka. You know, you could generally see that Becky Lynch, you know, was really happy for her getting that title. You know, the title opportunity, because like she mentioned, she had a epic, you know, feud with Asuka. You know, Asuka up until, I think, what was it, earlier this year, had her number. Asuka was like the only person who she didn't defeat. But you know, not Asuka. It's like her character now is more like Nikki Cross was before. Nikki Cross, you know, became Alexa Bliss's tag team partner / sidekick, you know. But yeah, congratulations to Asuka. And when you think about it, that's what Sasha Banks is right now. You know, even though Sasha Banks, you know, has more charisma than Bayley, you know, they're making her, you know, be subservient to her friend Bayley, you know, which is basically what Charlotte Flair was basically criticizing her, you know, on SmackDown. You know, I don't know why WWE is not pushing her, you know, but this has to be, you know, it reminds me of when Shawn Michaels was JBL's lackey. He lost like a match or something, and then Shawn Michaels briefly had to be subservient to JBL. I think that was just before the second match with Undertaker, you know, when he retired.
Right.
I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, I remember that.
But, yeah, for whatever reason, they're doing this to Sasha Banks. But the only way this makes sense is if Sasha, you know, has a face turn and, you know, feuds with her. Because it's clearly obvious. Even when, you know, when Becky was the, you know, before Becky went, I mean, not Becky, rather, Bayley went full heel, when she thought in her mind she was the hero to be the hero that, you know, she always was until she went full heel. Sasha Banks was always, even though Sasha Banks was standing in the shadows, the spotlight was still on her. But what's your thoughts on the whole situation?
You know, I think that I'm just looking forward to this epic battle that's going to happen soon between Sasha and Bayley. Mm-hmm. Clearly, right now, Charlotte Flair is trying to get into the head of Bayley. You know? And I think Bayley is going to end up backstabbing Sasha. It's not going to be the other way around where Sasha's going to backstab Bayley. You're going to have Bayley attack her to betray her because, you know, she's going to, she probably has it in her back of mind that, you know, Sasha, you know, might be coming after her title. Mm-hmm. So why not just come for Sasha first before Sasha comes for her?
And, you know,
Charlotte built those seeds, planted those seeds on SmackDown. So I think we're going to see that, you know, epic battle soon here.
That's a smart idea. I mean, you could see the collision courses happening, but you make a brilliant point because Sasha is usually the one that betrays, you know, Bayley,
yeah.
You know, in the past when they've been, you know, both, you know, baby faces, it's always Sasha that has the heel turn and betrays her because
right.
Bayley is usually the, you know, the naive, loyal friend of the two. But
mm-hmm.
now it's like a role reversal. So you might have a point there. And she does have history on her side, kind of like NXT when Johnny Gargano turned on Tommaso Ciampa, because it's usually the other way around, the other friend turning on the other friend. Or
mm-hmm.
even Dean Ambrose turning on Seth Rollins before he left. You know, after the same night that Roman Reigns briefly retired and said that he had, he had leukemia, so he had to go away.
Yeah.
For the rehab. So, and it, as you remember, Seth Rollins ended the Shield the first time when he betrayed Roman Reigns and
Dean Ambrose.
Dean Ambrose when he joined the Authority several years ago. So, there the storyline is there for Bayley to be justified that. You know, she can't trust her because history has shown that the legit boss will backstab her any moment to get a title shot, which we all thought that was going to happen at WrestleMania when they had that fatal five-way match.
Mm-hmm.
But right now they're doing a slow build of the breakup. But yeah, you're right. It is very intriguing once these two finally battle it out again. But, I'm trying to think what else happened in WWE. I mean, they had the Intercontinental match. Drew Gulak lost to his friend Daniel Bryan. And there's rumors, I think, that he got released by WWE.
Who, Drew Gulak?
Yeah, he fought yesterday.
Wasn't he on SmackDown?
He was on SmackDown yesterday.
Yeah.
It sounded like now that was his last match because he's gone from WWE.
Yeah.
And, of course, the reason why we're having the tournament is because they announced that Sami Zayn was stripped of the Intercontinental title, the newly minted Intercontinental title that he debuted just before WrestleMania. So the title's vacant now, and now there's a tournament, and AJ Styles is going to try to win his first Intercontinental title, but he's going to battle Shinsuke Nakamura, I think, next week. But well, what's your thoughts on that? They vacated Sami Zayn's title, but Brock Lesnar, he spends months upon months without defending the title, but they keep the title on him.
Yeah, I don't understand it. Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah, you have Brock Lesnar who goes months without defending it, and then you don't vacate his title. I mean, I guess it's, you know, it's status, really.
Mm-hmm. And I guess the rumors is that Sami Zayn is, you know, has his reservations, you know, because of the coronavirus.
And I don't blame him.
This might be the reason why he's staying, or he doesn't want to defend the title, you know. which is also the reason why reportedly Roman Reigns hasn't been WWE also. So I guess this is WWE punishing people who they feel like, you know, hey, pal, you know, you got to tough it up, pal, you know, you got to put a show for the fans, you know.
What's funny is that on the pay-per-view event, that was that funny moment where they came in and were about to wrestle in Vince's office. And then
It was Daniel Bryan and AJ Styles.
Yep.
Yeah.
I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, we're definitely going to talk about it. We're definitely going to talk about that match, in a few minutes. But, yeah, let's dive into the pay-per-view event. Let's see. Jeff Hardy, he defeated Cesaro. This is a match that I guess is a surprise match. I don't think we predicted that match. There was New Day. New Day defeated the Forgotten Sons. Of course, you know, New Day has Big E and Kofi. Xavier Woods is still rehabbing. And they defeated the Forgotten Sons, which has Steve Cutler and Wesley Blake and Jackson Riker also, but he wasn't competing. They also fought the Miz and Morrison and the Lucha House Party, which was Grand Metalik and Lince Dorado. So, yeah, I think we both thought, if my memory serves me right, I think we both thought Forgotten Sons was going to win. But that was not the case. Bobby Lashley, he defeated R-Truth.
What was that with R-Truth? R-Truth has been acting like a fool lately. With that?
Oh yeah, with his cousin Pretty Ricky. He's been doing that shit for years.
I've seen him on Twitter, doing it a lot. But R-Truth, man, he's hilarious.
Yeah, he's crazy, man. I wish they would just put the title on him for once, man. Like, geez,
yeah,
man, this guy's pay his dues, man. This guy's an entertainer, man. Like, and reportedly he's friends with, he's good friends with Vince, man. Like,
yeah.
Come on, Vince, put the title on the guy. This dude's been in the company on and off since, 2001, when he was K-Quick.
Yep.
With Road Dogg, after the New Age Outlaws broke up, Give R-Truth, the shot, man. They only gave him, one title shot, What was that like? What year was that? Like February 2011, that Capital Punishment pay per view event against Cena.
Was that when he had
Little Jimmy?
Little Jimmy, yeah.
Yup, exactly. Put the title on him, and he's a former TNA champion.
Yeah, and the guy has skills. He could wrestle.
Yeah. What more do they want? Like the dude has charisma. He has mic skills. To fight in the ring, like put the title on him. Come on. And another dude they gotta put a title on who he's feuding with is whatchamacallit, Bobby Lashley, man. He's in mid card purgatory, man. But the good thing about it right now is that MVP is teasing an alliance or managing him, Which I'm really intrigued about, what they're going to do with that. Hopefully this will, catapult Bobby Lashley to the level he needs to be so they can finally do this dream match. The little reason why Bobby Lashley came back in 2018 was to finally face Brock Lesnar, because his whole career in the WWE was in the shadow of Brock Lesnar, They both had similar backgrounds, fighting. In college and, being fighting in, MMA. So, come on, man. This is a WrestleMania type matchup. They gotta build Bobby Lashley up. Maybe even make him have a face turn and face Brock Lesnar. Come on. That's money right there. If done right, that could be a money match.
Yep.
They gotta use Lashley. Like, make our MVP be his manager, and you know, make him have the title, or make him chase Brock Lesnar for the title, which is the most likely scenario, because, you know, once Brock Lesnar show up and sneeze, he got the title. So that's why it didn't make sense to me last year that he won the Money in the Bank, you know, because, you know, Brock Lesnar always gets the titles, you know, when he shows up.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably going to get the title soon here or later, later in the year.
Exactly. Whenever Brock Lesnar gets the title, make Bobby Lashley chase it and win the title at WrestleMania. Because Bobby Lashley needs the win more than Brock Lesnar does.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, it makes perfect sense. But you know how WWE, when there's stuff that makes sense, they want to do their own thing. And it doesn't usually come out the way you want it to be. But I digress. Let's what else happened? Bayley versus Sasha Banks. I mean, not Bayley versus Sasha Banks. That's in the future. Bayley versus Tamina. She successfully defends her title against Tamina with the help of Sasha Banks. So Bayley is still the SmackDown Women's Champion. And this is the second most interesting match of the night. And this is, of course, the Monster Among Men, Braun Strowman, successfully defending his title against his former creator, the Eater of Worlds, Bray Wyatt. Not the Fiend Bray Wyatt, but the Mr. Rogers version of Bray Wyatt. So it looks like the theory is correct. With the exception of Goldberg, the Fiend only fights people who's wronged Bray Wyatt, especially him losing a match. And as you could see in the match, you know, Bray Wyatt had a chance to win, but then Braun Strowman flipped the script and used mind games on Bray Wyatt by wearing the black sheep mask, giving Bray Wyatt a false sense of security, and the Firefly Funhouse friends thinking that he's in the Wyatt family. So he let his guard down and basically blew his opportunity to regain the WWE title. And then whatchamacallit, they tease that the Fiend is coming. So next time Strowman faces Bray Wyatt, he will be facing the Fiend, because now he not only has he offended Bray Wyatt, he's humiliated him. And now the Fiend is coming for him eventually.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's gonna see, you might see that at SummerSlam maybe.
I hope so. They should not be facing each other before SummerSlam. As a matter of fact, as much as I wanted to see this match should have waited until SummerSlam at the you know, the earliest.
I agree.
Especially with the virus, man. This is a match that you have to save for SummerSlam or until the virus, is eradicated. You know, but WWE, they had to rush this feud. I mean, it's good, but this is a money feud, man. They should have saved this when the audience are in the seats, or at least at SummerSlam. You know, this is a marquee matchup. This is like legit a WrestleMania type of matchup.
Yeah, they should wait until SummerSlam. I mean, what's the next pay-per-view coming up here?
I'm trying to remember. Did they even announce it yet?
I'm not even sure.
Let's see. July? No, I mean June. What pay-per-view? I mean, back in the days, it used to be King of the Ring. But what pay-per-view comes in Bad Blood, maybe? I don't know. They didn't announce the pay-per-view yet.
Mm.
That's a good question. I'm going to have to find out what pay-per-view event they're going to have in.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I know July is Extreme Rules. July is Extreme Rules, I think.
Maybe.
And then,
I know Extreme Rules have came in like April or March, like right after WrestleMania, like, you know, Backlash. One of those two pay-per-view events pop up sometimes after WrestleMania. But, let's see. Let's see what pay-per-view they got.
Maybe it's
Backlash.
Oh, Backlash, okay.
See, that's what I'm talking about, because sometimes they have Extreme Rules, sometimes they have Backlash, like after WrestleMania.
What happened to Stomping Grounds?
They had that pay-per-view like maybe 1 or 2 years, but Stomping Ground didn't really do anything. Stomping Ground was not a memorable pay-per-view event to me anyway.
So Extreme Rules is in July.
It's in July this year.
Yeah, it was in July last year also.
I think they change it up from time to time. Because Backlash used to come like right after WrestleMania. But, I mean,
So next month is Backlash?
Yeah, June 14th, Backlash. Okay. Then July 19th is Extreme Rules. August 23 is SummerSlam. As of right now. But shifting gears.
That would make for a good trivia question. What WWE pay-per-views no longer exist?
Yeah, that's a good question. Oh yeah, speaking of which, you just reminded me of something. NXT, they're bringing back. They're going to have the first ever NXT TakeOver In Your House.
Oh, wow. In Your House. That's one I never haven't heard in years.
Yeah. It's the 25th anniversary of the In Your House pay-per-view event. They had on NXT, they had, DX. They had Shawn Michaels, Triple H, and Road Dogg talk about, the 25th anniversary of the first In Your House. And basically, to commemorate that, they're going to have a first ever NXT In Your House pay-per-view event coming up very soon. I can't remember when. Let's see if I could.
Remember Breaking Point?
Yeah, I remember that one. That was supposed to be like a
Survivor Series, or
yeah, it was like a submission match pay-per-view event. Yeah, In Your House, NXT TakeOver In Your House will take place Sunday, June 7th.
Okay.
So, there you go right there.
Fatal 4-Way, that's another one.
Yeah, I mean, some of these pay-per-view event names are dumb. Like, Fatal 4-Way should never be a name of a pay-per-view event. You know what I mean? Like, some stipulation matches should be a name of a pay-per-view event. Hell in the Cell, yes. Fine. Hell in the Cell, yeah, I'm fine with that, I guess. I mean, Royal Rumble, Survivor Series, it's fine. You know what I mean?
Elimination Chamber,
Hell in the Cell, you know.
One Night Stand.
But One Night Stand is not really like a stipulation match, though.
Well, it was a pay-per-view I'm talking about.
Yeah, but I'm talking about, like, pay-per-view events with like, you know, stipulation. You know, like Royal Rumble. You know, like, at that pay-per-view event, you know what I mean? Like, some pay-per-view events, you know, TLC, you know what I'm saying? Like, some of these pay-per-view events, you know, it's okay for them to have stipulation matches. You know what I mean? But the only problem with these stipulation matches is, like, when they're trying to sell it to the fans, they're like, you know, we're going to, at Hell in the Cell, we're going to feud. And we're going to be in a, a ladder call up on a pole match, a contract on a pole match? No, of course you're not going to expect that. What match are you going to expect? Hell in a Cell. Oh, my God. They're going to fight in a Hell in a Cell match at Hell in a Cell. Like,
yeah.
I would assume so. I definitely would want to see a chairs match as the main event at a Hell in a Cell match. But, you know, it is what it is, man. But shifting gears, or should I say continuing on, Drew McIntyre, he defeats Seth Rollins and defends his WWE championship. What's your thought on that match?
That was a good match. It may seem like that was Seth Rollins' last match before we see him again in WWE,
mm-hmm.
you know? Because you see at the end there, McIntyre shook his hand,
mm-hmm.
you know, as a sign of respect.
Yeah.
That makes you think, oh, is Rollins going to be a face now? Is he going to
mm-hmm.
go back to being a good guy? Or is just was that just, you know, a sign of, you know, just to say, hey, I hope to see you again in the future. And we're probably not going to see him for a while. So, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great match. But I think Rollins is going to take time off because of him and Becky wanting to start a family. So, you also might not see him until next year now, maybe.
I doubt it. Because do you remember what he did on Raw?
What did he do on Raw?
You don't remember? He fought in a tag team match. With Buddy Murphy versus Rey Mysterio and I think Aleister Black.
Uh-huh.
And during Seth Rollins was comatose the whole time. Before the match, Rey Mysterio congratulated him. Rey Mysterio was the only person that congratulated Seth Rollins on him being a father, because everybody was just focusing on her because, you know, she's the baby face. No one
mm-hmm.
was congratulating him. But, you know, Rey Mysterio was congratulating him from a father to a future father. He was congratulating him on, you know, having, you know, being a future father. And the whole time throughout the whole match, Seth Rollins was comatose, you know, just staring. Like, he was like Luke Gallows when he was Festus, you know, over a decade ago, just staring into, you know, into nothingness. And then out of nowhere, he snaps and starts attacking Rey Mysterio, and just he just drives Rey Mysterio's head eye into the metal part of the steel steps and causes his eye or near above his eye to bleed.
Wow.
So he totally snapped.
Intentionally?
Yes, of course he did.
No, but intentionally. You think he did it on purpose?
Well, yeah, he snapped. He snapped and he did it to the point that even Buddy Murphy was trying to stop him. And he's like, get back, get back. And then he just loses it and start purposely driving Rey Mysterio's face into that metal part.
Wow.
And then afterwards, you know, they go to a commercial break. They had, of course, the medical staff try to stop the bleeding, and they had to remove the Rey Mysterio's mask, but they censored it. And then, you know, after the segment, you know, Seth Rollins apologized and said, you know, I'm sorry, I don't know what came over me. And then afterwards, Aleister Black started attacking him, you know, and that I guess that's going to set up a future feud with Seth Rollins and Aleister Black, you know. So, there you go. So, Seth Rollins. Oh, yeah, and by the way, Seth Rollins even has a new theme song now. But, yeah, Seth Rollins. Yeah, that's what makes the match, the handshake make more no sense, because Seth Rollins isn't going away. You know, I guess it just means he just has a sign of respect for him, you know, for the match. But, What was I gonna say? But yeah, that's basically what happened. And then the match of the night, or the matches of the night, was, of course, the Money in the Bank ladder match. And this, for the first time ever, not only was it in a corporate, you know, WWE's corporate headquarters, it was on top of a roof, and also, for the first time ever, two Money in the Bank matches, the men and women's matches, are going on at the same exact time. So history was made there. What was your thoughts?
That turned out to be a great match. You know, both of those matches, I thought it was hilarious of them just going through the building, fighting in the offices, different rooms, and taking the elevator all the way upstairs to fight on the roof. I thought it was well planned and well scripted. I mean, it took the creative team a quarantine to come up with these creative ideas.
Yep.
Should have been come up with stuff like this a long time ago.
Yep. You are 100% right, man. The WWE, man, they're stepping up their games with their cinematic thing.
Yeah.
The first cinematic thing that I saw that they were really doing good with was the Ultimate Deletion match with Matt Hardy versus Bray Wyatt.
Right.
I think the House of Horrors one was a good one, if my memory serves me right. I think it was Bray Wyatt versus probably Orton, I think, that match maybe. I can't remember. I can't remember who it was. I think that was the case. But, yeah, those matches were good, but WWE, man, they didn't grasp the concept of having these cinematic matches. But now, man, they, you know, without an audience, they're really forced to try to be creative.
More creative.
They're bringing it, man. Love the Firefly Funhouse, the Boneyard match, and this. This is another great cinematic right here.
Yeah, that was a great match. Even, like, going back to the Orton-Edge match,
mm-hmm.
you know, WrestleMania, that one was a great one where they're just fighting,
mm-hmm.
you know, inside, you know, throughout the building, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they've been definitely stepping up their game, you know.
Yep.
Hopefully they get more creative.
Absolutely. And, yeah, and another thing is it was a funny match. Like it was they had some funny spots. They had some cameos by Brother Love, and you know, Stephanie McMahon, and of course Vince McMahon, who reportedly did not want them to fight in his room because he didn't want his dinosaur bones to be destroyed. So that's why he put a stop to it. In storyline and out, you know, and in real life, he did not want his place to be trashed. But yeah, I mean, it was a funny matchup, man. And then you got they're brawling all over the place. They're having food fights, which I'm usually not in favor of that because that's a waste of food. But it was a funny moment them throwing food at Paul Heyman.
Yep.
I'm trying to think what else. Oh yeah, the craziest thing was I think it was Baron Corbin who tossed out Aleister Black and Rey Mysterio off the roof. I could not believe that. I'm like, what the heck? That's crazy, man. But somehow they revealed on the next day on Raw that they somehow landed on a lower roof somewhere. But that would have been crazy if they would have just not let those two guys come back the next day and milked it. But like that would have gave Baron Corbin some brownie points, you know, him doing acting crazy like that. Like that would take his character to the next level because this guy is like a false tough guy, you know, having all these people help him out. You know, it's kind of similar to like JBL's character when he, you know, turn to JBL, finding ways to win by cheating and basically getting his butt kicked, you know, the majority of the match. But yeah, if he would have done that would have took his character to the next level.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And of course, he's still feuding with Elias. He lost to Elias on SmackDown in the Intercontinental Tournament match. You know, one of the matches in the first round of it. But yeah, all in all, it was a great match. And then you know, Asuka, she won it. Baron Corbin was Asuka and Baron Corbin were climbing up, and Asuka knocked the crap him off the
yeah,
off the thing to win her number one contendership, which would be later revealed, as we mentioned at the top of the show, that was actually for the women's title. So now Asuka's a two-time WWE Women's Champion, and then of course, you know, she did win the NXT Championship also.
Yeah.
So again, congrats to her. And then I think that was like that match was like 22 minutes, and then 5 minutes later, 27 minute mark, Otis shocked the world.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it got Mindy now. No, you got the big
Otis. Yeah, they're giving Otis a major push.
Yeah. So, yeah, he won because AJ Styles had Butterfingers, man, on the top of the ladder, man. It slipped out of his hand, and Shades of Carmella, James Ellsworth, you know, removing the briefcase several years ago and letting it drop, willingly drop to Carmella for her. I think it was the first ever women's Money in the Bank match years ago. Same thing happened, except AJ Styles did it by accident, and it slipped and fell right into his hands. Kind of like what happened to John Morrison at WrestleMania when Kofi and one of the Uso brothers, I think it was Jimmy, they were fighting on the top of the ladder, you know, on top of the ladder. They knocked John Morrison off, and he grabbed onto the title while he fell off to win the tag team titles, which of course the New Day would later win it on another day. But Otis, he won. So here's my question that I pose, to the listeners, and I pose it to you: which one was more shocking, Becky Lynch vacating the title because of her pregnancy, or Otis winning the Money in the Bank?
Wow, I would probably say, man, that's a good one. Probably say Otis winning Money in the Bank.
I totally agree with you. Yeah, as shocking as it is, Becky giving up the title and her being pregnant, you know, Otis winning the title, the Money in the Bank, when he couldn't even climb up the ladder in the first place, that was surprising. Now, don't get me wrong, you know, I'm a fan of Otis, but, man, I wish he would have won it in a better way instead of, you know, AJ, it's slipping out of AJ Styles' fingers, and then he just had the fortuitous bounce to get to grab the briefcase.
Yep.
And another thing is, he's most likely, when you think about it, he's going to fail. He's going to fail at his title defense, because he's going to be facing Drew McIntyre for the Raw champion, and you know he's not losing anytime soon. Or he's going to be facing Braun Strowman, which they teased at the main event of SmackDown when he was teaming against Miz and Morrison in a winning, fashion against the former tag team champions. And then, you know, he jokingly teased that he was going to attack him to cash in the Money in the Bank. So in all honesty, if Otis cashed in the Money in the Bank right now, he would lose. Don't you think?
Yeah. I think, well, but then again, I mean, right now, I could actually see WWE putting the title on Otis, to be honest with you. You know?
But against who? Who would he most likely have a chance of beating? Drew McIntyre or Braun Strowman?
I think it's probably Braun Strowman. I think something would happen where there would be an upset of him beating Braun Strowman, as unlikely for that to be. But I could see that happening, you know? It's something fluky like that could happen where, you know, some type of special stipulation match, you know, where he ends up beating him. Who knows?
For that to happen, he would have to turn heel. He would have to turn heel, or someone interferes. Like, because if Braun Strowman loses in like a if Braun Strowman doesn't lose in a believable fashion, that's going to ruin his title reign.
Yeah, it won't make it a believable. Yeah, that's true.
Because remember, these are both Braun Strowman and Drew McIntyre's first
reign. Yeah,
first title reigns. So you want to leave a good impression.
Yeah, but then again, he could win it. Like, I mean, of course he'd win it for the second time by beating Otis if that does happen. So I don't know. We'll see. Right now, this is a good position for WWE to be, where
mm-hmm.
you can expect the unexpected right now. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you don't know.
Absolutely, no doubt about that. So, yeah, all in all, that was a great, great pay-per-view match, you know, highlighted by the Money in the Bank matches. And then, of course, the Wyatt-Strowman match. But, yeah, shifting gears to AEW. It was announced on AEW that at their upcoming pay-per-view event, Double or Nothing, Mike Tyson is going to make an appearance.
I heard he's been training.
Yeah, I've heard that rumor too. You never know. He might pull a Evander Holyfield.
Yeah.
But, yeah, currently right now, the big feud right now is, basically Mike Tyson is gonna pop up on AEW to present the newly crowned TNT title. They're having a tournament right now as well, just like WWE is having a title for the Intercontinental title. You know, they're trying to crown an inaugural TNT title, which is basically like their intercontinental / TV title that they're going to have. And that's going to be next week, May 23rd, you know. But,
You know, now that Survivor is done for the season, I might have some time now to watch both NXT and AEW on Wednesday nights.
Yeah, no doubt. And what was I going to say? John Moxley, formerly known as Dean Ambrose, he's currently feuding with the leader of the Dark Order, Mr. Brody Lee, who formerly was known as Luke Harper. So last week, Brody Lee, the former Luke Harper, he attacked John Moxley with his you know, band of masked men attacking him, and he stole Moxley's AEW title. So at AEW pay-per-view event, a Double or Nothing next week, John Moxley is going to try to gain, well, actually, he's still the champion, but Brody Lee stole the title, you know, after he jumped them. So Brody Lee, he's calling himself the AEW champion, even though he never defeated John Moxley, aka Dean Ambrose, for the title. So at next on the 23rd next week, they're gonna battle it out for the AEW title.
Nice. Gotta check that out.
Mm-hmm. That's gonna be a marquee matchup right there.
Yeah.
And another thing, major thing that happened on AEW was that Cody Rhodes confronted Lance Archer and Jake the Snake Roberts for basically whatchamacallit. Jake the Snake put his snake on Cody Rhodes' wife, Brandi Rhodes, after the doctor Britt Baker hit a DDT on her on the outside, and basically Jake the Snake went old school and put his snake on her. So basically Cody Rhodes confronted Lance Archer, you know, in the ring, but he was unsuccessful, and basically, you know, Archer, you know, beat him up, and this is gonna lead to their feud. So that's another major thing going on. So a lot of interesting things are going on in the world of wrestling.
Yeah, that's definitely.
And switching gears to baseball, it was announced that that MLB is trying to get their season to start on, you know, like July 3rd, around July, you know, for the July weekend. But the day they're shooting for is July 3rd. So as a result, as of right now, the rumor is that DH is going to be universal. Much to my chagrin, the DH is going to be universal in both leagues, and that's basically it. It's going to be an 82 game season, and hey, my thoughts is that hey, whatever is going to make the Mets win the World Series, I'm for it. You know, personally, if I was the commissioner, if I was Rob Manfred, you know, I would have, if I'm so hell-bent on making the DH in the National League, I would have gave, this is the two options I would have gave the National League. I would have, made both teams decide before a game, a National League game, to decide if they're going to use, you know, AL rules, which is the DH, or keep it old school. And, you know, let the pitchers bat. Or the second option I would choose is that the home team decides, you know, whether or not they use the DH or not, thus having another home field advantage other than batting in the bottom of the ninth. You know, so that's another two options I would have done if I was the commissioner and I had to put this institute this you know, this DH in it, because I mean, in all fairness, it is in the Mets' best interest, you know, because they have Cespedes who's injury prone, they have Cano who had an off year, so they do have two guys who would benefit from this DH rule. But I feel like the National League should have that right to determine whether or not they want to use the DH rule or not. I don't think it should be forced upon, you know, the National League teams that they have to, you know, play with the DH, you know, because the DH rule debuted in 1973, you know. So I just feel like the National League, you know, the Senior League, they earned that right to decide whether or not they want to use the DH rule, you know, on any given day. But what's your thoughts? Someone who's who's been a Yankee fan, an American League fan, who basically knows the DH his whole life.
Well, you know how I feel about it. You already know how I feel about it. I mean, I think the National League needs to get with the times, man. I mean, don't you want more hitting in that league? You know, do you want to see pitchers come up and swing and miss every time? The easy outs? I mean, that should have been – NL should have upgraded to the DH a long time ago. You know, they should have upgraded to the DH after that baseball strike in 95, 94, whatever year was. But, you know, now it's finally happening. And, you know, over time you'll get used to it, you know, especially these young kids growing up, you know. 20, 30 years from now, DH in the National League, it's going to be something that they're used to seeing. So I'm glad that it's finally happened, but it should have happened a long time ago.
I mean, I see your point, but I guess Rob Manfred, he's listening to you, man. You know, he's that former player association rep, and you know now he.
I mean, not much is going to change. I mean, people are worried that it's going to change the game. It's not going to change that much, really. I mean, you're going to have more offense now in the National League, and now you're going to have it even with the American League now. So I don't see a big difference with the DH being at the National League, to be honest with you.
And don't get me wrong, that's my favorite thing about interleague, that you could play, you know, you could play the DH, you know, but I think just like how they did with the interleague, you know, making interleague every day, they ruined the magic that was interleague play, because interleague play is only good if you're facing a interleague rival or a team, you know, a team that two teams that rarely face each other, and you kind of want to see that what if World Series possible matchup would look like. But you know, the interleague play, when you have two random teams facing each other, you know, and especially every single day instead of the 2 week period they used to have back in the days, I mean, it just waters down the sport, you know, in my opinion. And you know, but we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah, I don't see it at changing the game at all, and I don't see a big difference adding the DH, to be honest, you know. So you're gonna have to get used to it.
I guess so. Have no choice. And shifting gears in the NBA, all the rumors right now. Oh wait, but before I go to the NBA, you heard about Schnell. He said that he doesn't want to play because he doesn't want to injure himself, and also he doesn't want to play, you know, with a pay cut. You know.
Ooh, wow.
Mhm. Yeah, he's the first player to basically say he refused to play.
Wow.
You know, under these circumstances. So that's going to be,
well, less money for him and more money for everyone else.
I guess so. I mean, that's a very bold statement. We'll see what happens, if it'll affect them, you know, past next year, you know. But, yeah, shifting gears to NBA. NBA, the rumors is that they wanna resume the season, and the latest rumor is that Knicks might be one of the teams that might still have a outside shot of making the playoffs. Now you're saying, what are you talking about? This is not 2000. This is the 2020 Knicks. How can they make the playoffs? Well, supposedly, with this proposal of them bringing back the season, the rumor is that they might have the teams, you know, the teams that are on the bubble, you know, like I think it was maybe from ninth place to 14th place, they compete for the ninth spot, and whoever wins would, I guess, make the playoff that way. It's some crazy scenario, which I don't think is going to happen. And quite frankly, I don't think it's fair for the league to do that. These other teams, the top eight teams, they worked their butt off to make it to the playoffs. So yeah. I don't think the Knicks deserve the right. And this is coming from a diehard Knicks fan, a guy who's been a fan of the Knicks for almost 30 years. So it's not fair to the other teams who work their butt off. And another reason is the Knicks are horrible. So why should the Knicks embarrass themselves playing in the playoffs and they're going to get knocked out, blown out?
The Knicks don't deserve to be anywhere near the playoffs. They should be banned from the playoffs.
They have been. They've been banned since 2001 with exception of, what was it, 2013, when they had Jason Kidd and Tyson Chandler and those guys, you know, bypassing the Celtics and then losing to the Pacers. And then, of course, they get swept or win one game in the other playoffs that they appeared in the past 20 years, which I don't count. Except for the game that they won one game, I'll count that one. If you get swept in the playoffs, to me, it don't even count. Even though technically it does count, but on paper it counts, but in my mind it doesn't count. But that's just me. But another rumor, I don't know if you heard about this rumor. There's a rumor that the Knicks might trade Barrett for Victor Oladipo. And to me, Victor Oladipo, he's a good player. But he's not a player I would give up Barrett. I wouldn't give up Barrett for anybody, to be honest with you. Barrett is the guy that you have to. Him and Mitchell Robinson should be the untouchable guys on the team, because you want to. This basically, Barrett is supposed to be replacing Porzingis. What Porzingis was supposed to mean for the team before the whole funk hit the fan last year. And, you know, they traded him away. You need homegrown guys, homegrown Knicks players, to draw star players to come, theoretically speaking. Because we all know that no star player wants to come to the Knicks until they're like a championship-caliber team in the year 3000. So for them to trade away a homegrown guy who has superstar potential would be a dumb move. Because, as you can see, the league is business, man. You know, it's not the good old days of the last dance where you got players like Pippen who are grossly underpaid, rank 126, you know, on the payroll at the time. Was it the 98 season? And, you know, and this guy was the best number two guy in the league. But, you know, these players nowadays, they don't have no loyalty, man. You know, they only have loyalty to the dollar sign. That's why these players are just moving around all over the place. You know,
mm-hmm.
So
yep.
You, especially with the Knicks, as horrible as the Knicks is, they need every good player that they could get. If you got a young guy who's homegrown, because when you think about it, the only people who want to play for the Knicks are these young guys who are dropped out of college or high school, who, you know, seeing the highlights of when the Knicks used to be good, you know, nearly 30 years ago. These are the people who want to play for the Knicks. These, you know, a lot of these prima donna superstar players, they don't want to play with the Knicks. You know what I mean? The Knicks, like Durant said, the Knicks aren't cool. You know, the image of the Knicks isn't cool anymore, you know, unless if you know the history of the Knicks and you care about basketball. You're not going to want to come to the Knicks. The Knicks is unfortunately the laughing stock of the league, man. And I never thought in a million years I'd be ever saying that, you know, being a kid growing up in the 90s during the quote-unquote good old days, that every year after year was ruined by Jordan's dominance, you know. This is the good old days. You know, the Knicks, you know, they put their heart and soul on the floor, and unfortunately, they don't have the ring to show for it. But you know, that's you know, basically what happened, man. Because of that, Patrick Ewing is not going to be as great as a player Patrick Ewing was, and as great as he had a lot of big games in the playoffs, he's not remembered as a winner because he could never get over that hump.
His team never won a championship.
Repeat that?
His team never won a championship.
Exactly. And that's why, you know, him, you know, Charles Barkley, Reggie Miller, you know, they're not as great as those players were. They're not looking the same light as Magic, Bird, and Jordan, you know. Or even going back, you know, Russell, you know, Chamberlain or Jabbar or Jerry West, those type of guys, you know, they're not on that level. They're close, but unfortunately, their teams didn't, you know, take them to the promised land. So, you know, that's just the way it is. Lastly, what was your thoughts on this? You know, episode 7 and 8. You know, where they dived into, you know, to Jordan's fourth championship and, you know, him playing baseball with, you know, the minor league White Sox team, Birmingham Barons, you know, being coached by your old friend Terry Francona, and of course, you know, the aftermath of him, you know, mourning his father. What was your thoughts on that whole episode, yeah, 5, 7, and 8?
I thought both were great episodes, you know. So, seeing that episode where, you know, they went into detail about his dad's death. Well, they didn't go into great detail about the death, but, you know, them just talking about it and Jordan reminiscing on the times he spent with his dad, especially, you know, after games, getting advice from his dad being, you know, his best friend. And I thought that was, you know, pretty sad to watch, but throughout this whole series, they pretty much delve deep into, you know, certain details of Jordan's career and his life outside of basketball. And, you know, they went into details about his gambling last week, or I think it was a couple weeks ago, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So they were talking about a little bit last week as well.
Mm-hmm.
Some even speculating that he probably retired because, you know, the NBA suspended him or was going to suspend him for gambling, which he said was not true. And even David Stern, rest in peace, said that, you know, it was just a conspiracy. It wasn't true. It wasn't true either. So, I thought it was a great couple episodes last week. And this week, obviously, you know, these are the final two episodes that are going to be airing tonight. And you'll see that epic 7-game series against the Pacers and that NBA final series against the Jazz, including the flu game. So I want to see more of that, more of what they're going to talk about. I heard that when Jordan had that flu game, he didn't really have the flu. He had flu-like symptoms.
Mm.
But it was actually caused by a late-night pizza eating that gave him food poisoning the next day.
Mm.
So he really didn't have the flu all this time. All this time we thought, you know, he was sick with the flu. It really wasn't the flu. It was just symptoms that he was suffering from food poisoning, it looks like.
Wow.
So you'll, you know, maybe you'll hear more about that later tonight.
Yeah, man. I'm glad I'm watching this series because it's been phenomenal. You know, it's been as clutch as Jordan in the playoffs. You know.
Yep.
You know, prior to 1990, well, after 1991. So I mean, I definitely can't wait to see the final two episodes, and next week we'll give you our full series. Review of this series. Anything you'd like to say, Mac?
No, just enjoy the series tonight and stay safe. And, yeah, see you guys next week.
You heard the man. Check out Sports Urban Legend next week. Same time, Saturday at 11. Check out my YouTube channel, Sports Urban Legend TV. There's some new episodes. You know, I gave a tribute to the 1970s Knicks team that won 50 years ago last week. So check that out. And I'll see you guys next time. Yzy Macaulay Matthew, I'm Wayne Ramo, and I'll see you guys next week. Peace.